Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Roz, Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, November 11th, and you're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
Well, coming up between now and the new music show with Better Da Silva at 7pm, Alan Colley and Stephen Kelly are with us to reflect on an incredible achievement for Drogheda United as they were crowned FAI Cup champions. And we'll round up all the latest Premier League talking points. In rugby, Keane Tracy and Stephen Ferris review Ireland's defeat to New Zealand, and we'll look ahead to what changes are needed ahead of Friday's test against Argentina.
Plus, we'll wrap up the rest of today's sports news headlines, go through our weekend sporting highlights, and with thanks to PwC, we have an amazing €400 to give away to one lucky listener. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Well, Shane Dawson, on a foggy Monday evening, €400 cannot be sniffed at. So, with the PwC Camogie All-Stars take place this Friday at Croke Park to celebrate the excellence in Camogie and recognise the country's top players. And you can show your excellence in Camogie knowledge and be in with the chance to win yourself €400 in cash, all thanks to PwC.
So, for a chance to win, simply answer the following question. Who won the 2023 PwC GPA Camogie Senior Player of the Year? Was it A, Cork's Amy O'Connor, or was it B, Waterford's Beth Carton?
Text your answer, name and email address to 51552 and we will announce the winner at the end of the show. As always, competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for the details.
Game on 2FM.
Now that the competition is out of the way and €400, I mean, get your texts in to win €400. It's incredible, incredible stuff. Ruby Walsh, as is tradition of a Monday, we are going to reflect on our sporting weekend highlights. Keane Tracy, rugby writer with the Irish Independent, is with us. As is Alan Colley, the dyed-in-the-wool Drogheda United fan, I believe was the
from
term.
Sligo.
From Sligo was the term. That's Peter Collins' words, not mine.
That was the line that Peter used. Yes, yes. Evening, Shane. Evening, Ruby. I may have sang a song.
You were standing on the
night.
Nine.
I may have sang a song or two for the famous Drogs, as you say, Shane. So for one night only, I was a die in the wool Drogs fans, and I think I'm allowed because it's not often that you're best friend is managing the team to lift the FAI Cup, and to see him do it was absolutely amazing, Shane. So needless to say, I may have sang a song or two with him last night as well.
Sang a song or two. It sounds like you're standing on the line shouting instructions.
Well, people were suggesting I was part of that as well, Ruby.
So I heard on the grapevine now that you might have been up there the odd evening, and well, you might have been above in the stand with a little walkie-talkie, according to what I was hearing.
Yeah, well, we've heard all these stories with Bielsa and Spygate and all these kind of things, so I don't want to let too much out of the bag, but maybe there was a conversation over the few weeks about what was upcoming for the challenge to beat Derry and stuff. But no, I can't take any credit for that, Ruby. All down to Kevin. He's done an unbelievable job, such an achievement as well. I think the first part-time team in 20 years, and it would have been the norm maybe for part-time teams to be winning the cup over the years, but because of the progression of the league over the last number of years and more teams going full-time and the league becoming more and more professional, Drogheda are the only team in the league who are part-time. And now they do have plans to go full-time, and that's obviously their ambition, like all the other clubs, and that's where we want the league to progress forward to. But they were part-time. There was lads in that team, an accountant, Darren Markey, Gary Deegan, the club captain, is a postman. Kevin was a postman up until the start of the season, and he did go full-time at the start of the season as the manager. So some, like, I suppose when you get a group of players together like that, and he has bonded them over the last 2 or 3 years, and to go on and lift the FAI Cup is a hell of an achievement from Kevin, and I couldn't be happy for him. It was a great day.
Some mightn't like teachers in the Dáil, but postmen certainly work with a football team.
Postmen, I tell you,
I've
played with a few postmen over the years, Ruby, and they're as good as you'll get.
The league, the postman is a staunch League of Ireland
job.
It is. You can make a League of Ireland 11 out of postmen, I would say. I would imagine.
I think taxi was another one.
Taxi man, yeah. Johnny McDonald. There's a TV show in the making of just following Johnny McDonald around in his jar.
All to do with delivering, isn't it? Being a taxi man or the postman. Well, safe to say what Alan Colley's highlight was. Keane Tracy, had you a highlight?
Well, it certainly wasn't the Aviva Stadium on Friday night, Ruby.
You should have came with us yesterday.
Yeah, well, to be fair, the atmosphere looked a lot better than what it was on Friday night.
Is your first FAI Cup final you missed then?
Yeah, a few years. I have been going to the bit of a bandwagoner as a neutral, and I have to say it's brilliant to see how the FAI Cup final has become such a key fixture in the Irish sporting calendar. I think there probably was, I'm right in saying, a bit of trepidation around the attendances because there was no Dublin clubs. Yeah. And obviously that had been the case for the last few years, and you just, I'd say there was a lot of neutrals there. Obviously you were
there, always is a walk up of neutrals.
Don't look at him and say neutral.
Yeah, like, that's true. Yeah. No.
I think that was the worry, Cian, because they say no Dublin clubs, and Drogheda, who would probably be averaging 3,500-4,000 would they, Shane, every week?
Yeah.
But they brought, I think, 15,000, and they were unbelievable, the fans down behind the goals. Derry would have brought, I think, 20,000 as well. So I think it's off the back, and we mentioned this on Friday, off the back of a brilliant league season last week, the Duff story and Shells and all the eyes on the league. So even though the FAI Cup has come this standalone outstanding fixture, it was an unbelievable time to have it this year off the back of what went the week before as well. So I think all that's feeding into the interest now, and it's a great time for the League of Ireland.
Yeah, I do actually just want to read out a couple of figures while you're mentioning the League of Ireland as well. 38,723 was the official attendance, which is a record for two non-Dublin clubs, which is what you were alluding to, Cian, as well. So that was absolutely brilliant to see. And news today as well, attendances, I should say, across the League of Ireland in 2024 broke the million mark for the first time ever. A total of 1,001,630 fans went to games in the SSC Electricity Men's Premier Division, First Division, Women's Premier Division, Sports Rec Men's and Women's FAI Cups, the All-Ireland Cup and European matches involving League of Ireland clubs as well. So, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves, Alan. It is absolutely brilliant to see.
As I say, it's a really good time, but it has to be capitalised on as well, Shane. And as much as we say it's brilliant at the moment, there's still lots of work to be done. And in terms of the facilities themselves, it's brilliant that we can have a stadium like the Aviva to hold the cup final and to get 40,000, but we need to get to a situation, as I says to you on Friday, that needs to be normalised rather than us kind of saying, oh, isn't it great that we can get 40,000 into a stadium. When that becomes normalised, and I think it's heading that way with the cup, but if we get the facilities up to scratch across the league, and all of a sudden we're getting 6,000 and 7,000 maybe into every match as well, and they're all up to a standard where you can have a proper match experience and bring families and kids and all, because the interest now is unbelievable. The amount of kids that were at that match even yesterday, it's incredible. And as I say, it has to be built on, it has to be capitalised on. Even speaking to Mark Scanlon yesterday and all, they're doing great work, to be fair to them, but they want to drive the whole thing forward, and they're going to need some help coming back from them, government funding, investment, all that. But I finally think those type of conversations are finally landing on the doorsteps that they need to be landing on.
There's definitely a sense that if not now, when, the amount of momentum that's behind it. And it's not just the FAI Cup final. You look at the Shell story, and that would have captured people who wouldn't have had any interest at all in the League of Ireland. So you're right, you would just really hope that they can kick on.
After all this League of Ireland show, we never even got your sporting highlight.
Sorry, my sporting highlight, I'm going to go to Twickenham in Australia, beating England with the last play of the game. An unbelievable try from their replacement winger, Max Jorgensen. It was just a huge victory for Australian rugby, not to, you know, like, it's hard to overplay it, because, you know, they've got a Lions tour coming up next year. There was a lot of fears that it could be a 3-0 whitewash, and all of a sudden you're starting to see the Joe Schmidt impact. So it's no doubt the biggest win of his short tenure so far. And when you look at the results across the board, lads, from the weekend, like Ireland losing on Friday, Fiji beating Wales yesterday, Australia beating England, all of a sudden Ireland's remaining three games, Argentina hammered Italy, all of a sudden Ireland's remaining three games this month have become much harder than I think a lot of people would have thought at the start of the month. But yeah, in terms of the highlights, Australia beating England, and just the way that they did it with the last play of the game, an unbelievable try, the skills under pressure that they showed was phenomenal. So it really sets up the Ireland-Australia game on November 30th even more now.
It most certainly does. Shane Dawson, did you a highlight?
Not to steal Alan's highlight, but I think Drogheda United, to be honest, Kevin Doherty, I'm so happy for him. I knew Kevin's actually late father, Liam, who used to go to a lot of Shells matches when I was younger. He used to be on the buses with us and stuff like that. So just that story and what Kevin has done for Drogheda and all the narratives around the part-time outfit that they are, and against all odds achieving what they did, and they were rank outsiders and they were the underdogs as well. I know Derry didn't really perform on the day and they haven't in a while, but that was brilliant. Alexis Shane Farrell as well, I think he mentioned it in his press, in his interview after the match. He was there playing for Shells 2 years ago and he himself admitted he's probably the worst player in the pitch. Granted, he was coming into it with an injury, he's playing out of position as well, but I would say that had a real mental effect on him, and this fallout with the comments with Duff and everything, and how that was misconstrued as well, I think, in the media, to be fair. So a bit of redemption for the likes of Shane Farrell, for players Luke Dennison in goal, who left Bowes, who wasn't getting his game there. Conor Kane wasn't getting his game. Ryan Brennan in midfield, what, 32 years of age, I think he is. The two boys up top as well, kind of coming in. So it's players that perhaps aren't household names, and it's great to see them win a trophy as well and draw this second.
I think on that ever. As well, Shane, that's a mark of management for me. Because if you're one of the big clubs and you have all the resources and the budget and you can get the best players, but if you're down the bottom and it's a real struggle financially, whatever, if you're down one of those clubs, and that's where Drogheda have been, unfortunately, over the last 2 or 3 years for whatever reasons, but that makes the achievement even more greater, I think, that he's able to assemble a group of players, as you said. Like Dave Webster was a sub at Bray Wanderers last year. Kev gets him in, he puts a shape and a setup on the team. You see the effort and the desire they played for yesterday, played with their hearts but also played with their heads in terms of the setup, and the outfoxed Derry as well tactically. They were absolutely brilliant to wear in terms of the game plan. Obviously, Kevin has to set up the game plan and the players have to carry it out. But I think that's a mark of real management, that when you're, we talk about even in England and at the top clubs, and I know there's expectation when you're at the top clubs and people will suggest, well, you get the best players, it's a lot easier. I think if you can get a group of players like that and the resources are very limited and you can put them together and put a shape on them, I think that's an even extra achievement.
Ruby Nottingham Forest-esque.
The likes of that. Yeah, good example.
Nuno, good goalkeeper. Before we get your sporting highlight, Ruby, just because we are talking about Drogheda and Kevin Doherty, John O'Shea was asked about the achievements really at today's press conference.
Yeah, lots of dealings with Kev. Obviously, I did my pro license with Kevin, and obviously with Higgs as well. So it was, it was good to be there to witness it yesterday for the two of them, but obviously tough one for Higgs to take in. But look, that's what happens in a cup final, and I was delighted for Kevin, and I know the preparation and the sacrifices that he makes to give it a right go, and great to see the emotions there from him yesterday. It was brilliant to see. I was texting him a few times during the season, but I knew he would. I decided to leave him alone yesterday because I knew it was a special day for him, and I'll be in touch with him over the next few days. When I don't think they would have partied too hard, because obviously they have an important game coming up as well. But no, it was brilliant to see that emotion. Obviously, I know his assistant, Dara Doyle as well, that on the pro license too. So, yeah, no, brilliant to see.
I'm assuming partying was curtailed because of the playoff on Saturday, Alan.
I was singing the songs and I was in bed by 11.
Ruby, your sporting highlight. He's lost.
I just like get off the fence there. You're out. You won the cup final. We must have white and played it if we're not going to celebrate it. You've all we week to get over it.
If you believe we were in bed at 11, Ruby.
Please, come on, tell the truth. Yes. What was my highlight? Mine was a moment, actually. Okay. And mine was Sammy Smolich's goal for Ipswich.
Oh, good show.
Brilliant.
Yeah, good show.
But the overhead kick. I mean, if any other nationality, he'd be leaping up and down. Did you see this? But because he's Irish, it's almost like he fluked it.
He shinned it.
Good one.
He absolutely is. And we will be chatting about the Irish national team very shortly.
I think John O'Shea was a nay. I think he had a winner in Nace yesterday.
John O'Shea did?
Yeah, part of a syndicate. I think he was part of the syndicate that owned the winner of the first race in Nace yesterday, Miss Tempo.
No. And he was at the rugby on Friday night, Ian, wasn't he?
Yeah, I saw him afterwards. Yeah, he was enjoying himself.
He's a good fella, John O'Shea. And even that, the likes of that with Kevin and all, he would have done the pro licence with all those lads. Still keeps in touch with them. Obviously, he would have grown up with a lot of those lads and played on schoolboy teams, underage teams at the Irish setup. Yeah, I've so much time for John O'Shea.
Yeah, John and Hamer were both at the FAI Cup final, sitting in the president's box. A couple of seats down for me. Not one to name, John.
The prawn sandwich seats.
Listen, we're going to chat Association football in detail after a short ad break, but a couple of news headlines to get through as well. We'll save the football ones until our football segment. But Katie Taylor has expressed her strong belief that Amanda Serrano will again suffer defeat in their repeat clash this week in Texas. The duo are set for a rematch on the undercard of Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul at the 18th AT&T Stadium, with over 70,000 expected to be in attendance. The fight for the undisputed lightweight welterweight title is scheduled for the early hours of Saturday morning. The result is going to be the same, I'm very, very confident, said Taylor, and we will be building up to that one a little bit later in the week as well. Galway football legend Noel Tierney has sadly passed away at the age of 82. The Milltown clubman won three All-Irelands in a row from 1964 to 1966, starring from fullback in the famed Tribesmen team. He was named Footballer of the Year in 1964 at the age of 22, the highest honour in the game in the pre-All-Stars era. Tierney's honours also included five Connacht Championships and a National League title with Galway in 1965, plus two Railway Cups with Connacht, including as captain in 1969. With Milltown, he won a Galway Senior Football Championship title in 1971, their first ever County Championship win. And the final bit of news is racing, actually, Ruby. You might get your thoughts on this, because I know Jane was on the show on Friday, and we were actually speaking about the weather and the unseasonably dry weather that we're having and the effects it's having on race courses, both domestically and in England. But the continuing lack of rain in Tipperary has led to the cancellation of the jumps meeting at Thurles for the third time. Following an inspection this morning, the track was found to be unsuitable for racing this week due to the lack of give in the ground. Two attempts were previously made to host the meeting, but the unusual lack of wet weather has forced another delay, which is very unseasonable for this time of year. Thurles Racecourse will once again liaise with Horse Racing Ireland about the possibility of a new date later in the season. It's a bit bizarre, and I'd imagine there's financial losses.
Well,
there's
huge financial implications for Thurles, which is an independent racecourse as well, but obviously media rights. No show, no dough. And, obviously they would be budgeting with that money in mind. But it's not... We were just talking about it at NACE yesterday. I can remember an autumn like this or early winter, but it was, I think, frost and snow. I was actually injured. I remember Barry Geraghty texting me at one time, would you stop stabbing the voodoo doll so the snow might go away? Yeah, look, it is unfortunate. But look, the rain will come. It's Ireland. It will rain eventually. But Thurles is the kind of track that rain... You never see a race being called off in January, February because of a waterlogged track at Thurles. It does take a lot of rain to soften it up for National Hunt racing, but National Hunt, for the real winter horses or the higher class horse, is a winter sport, and you need winter conditions, and we haven't got winter conditions just yet, but they will come, have you no doubt.
They most certainly will. Okay, we're taking a short ad break and then we're chatting football with Alan Colley and Stephen Kelly very shortly. We'll reflect more on Drogheda's victory, hear from John O'Shea and the couple of call-ups to the national team, and all the Premier League drama to get through as well. Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. As we continue our association football chat, we will be chatting Premier League shortly. We hear from John O'Shea, who's up in front of the media, ahead of the international matches this week. But just continuing our conversation on the FAI Cup final, and listen, Alan, I know we were speaking about how great it is for Kevin, the achievements in that regard, and celebrating that as well. I do want to get your thoughts on Derry and how that season has ended. But on the match itself, really, just tactically, and we talk about the work rate, Drogheda got everything right. I know, I think Kevin even mentioned it about how they targeted Michael Duffy, and it's when your rifle is getting man of the match, yeah, kind of says it. But like, I even, when I was looking at Ryan Brennan and Shane Farrell, admittedly I saw them in centre mid, I was like, oof, I don't know about this, they might get overran a bit. But just Drogheda seemed to get every area of the pitch right.
Yeah, and I think when you are going to be successful, Shane, you have to get the big decisions right as a manager. And even the one where I thought Luke Heaney might have started in the game because of his energy and his legs, and there was a lot of debate and discussion around the match that the big pitch might not suit Drogheda. So if you have a lad like Luke Heaney who can cover the ground, everybody expected him to start, but Kevin did the opposite and went with the footballers, Dara Markey, Shane Farrell, and obviously Ryan as well. But Ryan played with so much experience just sitting in front of the back three, but he played with some energy levels as well. He got so much out of him. He played with the back three, and this is a thing, even if you look at the transformation with Drogheda, when they were struggling in the mid part of the season, and they were struggling, they were 5 points behind Dundalk at one stage when Dundalk beat them back in the middle of the summer, and then the following week they played Dundalk, but Kevin changed the formation and he got a couple of players in that helped as well, and that was the personnel that he needed then to maybe change the formation. He went with the two up top with Dougie, who did really well for him,
And Frank Perro.
He's ended up scoring, I think, 7 goals in the cup run as well, and 6 in the league. So he's had an unbelievable impact. He changed to a 3-5-2 and went with wing backs so that he could get two up front, and that change has been unbelievable for the team, because we spoke about Dave Webster, who was probably struggling in a back two as a centre half. He's 35 now, but all of a sudden he was able to play almost like an old fashioned sweeper in the middle of the two centre halves, Quinn and Bulger, and then you had the energy levels of Kane, Conor Kane, who was brilliant at left wing back yesterday, and as you say, Alicia down the right, who marshalled Michael Duffy, and Michael Duffy is probably one of the best players in the league over the last 5 or 6 years, and that's why I think Alicia got man of the match. He was outstanding against Duffy. But if you look at that shape and what you're trying to combat with Derry, and Derry have all the technical ones, it's basically shuffling over and back your distances and trying to close gaps and plug holes, and that's where they were so good. And then when the chances came in terms of the set piece, the one, the penalty, you have to take your chances when you get them as well, Shane. But in terms of the setup, Derry could have been there till today, and I don't think they would have scored. Now, Derry themselves lacked a real cutting edge, and there was no real fight and heart in them. So I think Kevin probably outfoxed Derry, but they also outfought them as well. And I think that's the biggest thing that'll disappoint Rory and Derry City and the fans, that whatever about losing a match, but if you're outfought in the match, particularly a final, that's hard to live with.
Where does this leave Rory Higgins?
It's a good question, and to be fair to Rory, it was a hard interview watching him yesterday. Like, he was crestfallen, he really was, and not just off the back of losing a cup final. I mentioned here on Friday, Shane, the damage psychologically losing that league would have done to them. If you think about it, and I've used the phrase a couple of times now, they were in a 2-horse race and finished 4th, and that's why I felt Drogheda had a brilliant chance going into the final yesterday, because Derry were on their knees. The psychological damage of that, losing that league title when you were red hot favourites maybe to win it 2 or 3 weeks out, and then all of a sudden they didn't even get into Europe, so all the pressure was on them going into that match yesterday to win, to try and get Europe. And if you go back to earlier in the season as well, Shane, the European match, they lost to a team from Gibraltar. So when you think there was so much hope and expectation for Derry City at the start of the season, and then for it to basically unravel in the manner that it has, I think that's why we've seen the bitter disappointment in Rory yesterday. And I think serious questions need to be asked in terms of the players and the personnel, and I suppose the setup, what's going to happen going forward. I think we all knew he was under real pressure going into the match. That could be him out of a job, to be honest with you, Shane.
Big decisions to make. Just a note to wrap up our League of Ireland chat, St. Pat's have added another winger to their squad, Simon Power, joining from Sligo Rovers, and Galway United captain Conor McCormick signed the new deal to remain at the club. International news, Wolves fullback Matt Doherty has been called up today to the Republic of Ireland squad ahead of the games this week against Finland and England. Doherty will join the squad after the 32-year-old expressed his displeasure having been left out of the games in October after centre-back Andrew Omobamadeli played it ahead of him against Greece. Doherty is called up alongside Southampton's Ryan Manning and Everton's Jake O'Brien after Duffy, Adamida and Seamus Coleman pulled out of the squad injured. Doherty may well get game time in the two matches with Festi Ebiseli on the doubtful list. John O'Shea was speaking about these call-ups earlier today.
Yeah, obviously when you're losing that experience would be the key part of it. Obviously we've spoken about beforehand the experience of Seamus and Matt, and then a chance to obviously see other lads in those areas. Obviously Shane, tough on form as well. He's got back in and playing well, but he's just obviously been carrying on with a bit of an issue as well, so unfortunate. But look, it is what it is, and obviously Ryan getting back in at Southampton as well, getting minutes in the Premier League, very important. So it's a case of getting that experience, losing Robbie as well, Robbie Brady, getting that experience back into the team as well is important. But hopefully, there'll be enough time with it. We'll be well prepared. We know, obviously, Finland from the last time round, and full focus on that, but obviously aware it's a quick turnaround then again for England too. So the video sessions and detailed meetings that we'll have to go into, there'll be a few more meetings. Sammy will be delighted to hear, but look, the players are well used to it now, because as you mentioned, it is a strange process with the speed of recovery that you have to get into lads, and hopefully then maybe some lads having to play 2 games and managing maybe in the first game, so making sure they're available in the second game type of thing. But most importantly, just full focus on Finland as well.
Just a note as well, Lee Carsley's final match as an interim charge of England looked like they're being hampered by a number of injury problems. Trent Alexander-Arnold is out for 2 weeks with a hamstring injury and will miss the games with Greece and indeed with the Republic of Ireland. Jack Grealish, Cole Walker, Bukayo Saka and Declan Rice are all doubts to feature as well. Before we chat Premier League, just Alan, just your reaction to that. Will there be any disharmony with Matt Doherty coming back into the squad?
I don't think so, Shane. I think it's up to Matt to kind of do his stuff, if you like, and show the question mark that everybody was having over him was the lack of effort, if you like, in his performances. And that was the criticism after one of the goals in the game, in one of the Nations League games there a couple of matches back. So I think it's up to Matt, and it's on Matt that if he gets the opportunity to show everybody what he can do and also show that he's committed to the cause, because I think that's something that you shouldn't have to be questioned over if you're playing for an international team. And that was the label that was put on Matt, and I think rightly so. In that game, in that particular incident, it was really, really poor from him. But as I say, it's water under the bridge now. He's back in the squad, but I think he needs to show that he should be in the squad on merit, rather than just suggesting that I should be in the squad because I played many caps and I'm playing for Wolves.
Well, if you're going to talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk. And looking at the Premier League, you talk to talk about Arsenal, Alan Collins. They ain't walking the walk.
Ruby, you were waiting for this one, weren't you?
I know it's actually killing me, the fact that Ipswich beat Spurs and we've no Stephen Kelly either.
All right, so you're waiting for me. You're waiting for me and Stephen.
Yeah, two you lined up this weekend in my sights.
Okay.
So you're getting the brunt of it now.
Just to know, we're putting your voice to test here. Stephen Kelly's actually stuck in rush hour traffic in London at the moment. So unfortunately, we've no Stephen Kelly. He was stuck in a boat the last time he was due on. Now he's stuck in traffic.
But well, it's funny how when Spurs lose, he gets stuck in traffic, isn't it?
You're right. There you go. Well, at least I'm front up.
It's like you going to bed at 11 o'clock.
I'll front up to these questions, Ruby, no problem. Yes, I did predict Arsenal would win the league, and I think they're struggling now. I really do.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're really struggling, because if you look at the points gap now, and Liverpool in red hot form as well, they're, what is it, 11 points behind, or is it 9 points behind? It's a big ask for them now. And I think the problem, obviously, they're missing the big players, Odegaard. And again, it was only a point they picked up yesterday away to Chelsea. Now, Chelsea are a decent side. I think the only saving grace for Arsenal in terms of maybe the title race at the moment is that Man City are struggling as well. But then you have to look at Liverpool and the red hot form they're in. Now, they won't maintain that, Ruby, but I just think when you look at the points gap at the moment, 9 points, it's a lot to make up already, even though we're still early in the season.
11 games gone, not quite a third of the way, but I'd prefer to have a 9-point lead now than be looking at someone 9 points in front of me, Al.
100%, yeah, and especially not just having that lead, the form they're in as well. Like, they look electric, Liverpool, they really do. They're all chomping at the bit for game time. He has them all, the squad fit bar Jota, the front five, if you like, even and without Jota, it's the front four. He can only pick 3 really, so there's the competition for places. They're all desperate to get game time there. Gakpo, Diaz, Nunes, and obviously Salah's going to play most weeks. So he's done a brilliant job, Slot. I don't think they're going to maintain it in terms of like going the season unbeaten or anything like that. I know they lost to Forest, but it's not like they're going to win an 11 on the bounce after this as well. But they will hit some sort of sticky patch. But in fairness, all the questions that's been posed to Arne Slot and Liverpool at the moment, they're answering every one of them, and unfortunately Arteta hasn't. And I think what's cost them as well, Ruby, if you look at the games where they have slipped up, their discipline has let them down as well. There was 3 red cards in those games where they slipped up, and whatever about losing your best players, but when you are getting lads sent off as well, and then you're having to face teams with 10 men, it's an even bigger ask than what it would be with 11.
Speaking of managers, Ruud van Nistelrooy has left Manchester United officially. The club have confirmed, with all the coaches as well. So Ruben Amorim is coming now in officially his first day, and he has an international window to bed in as well. Good thing that it is just a kind of clean slate, and that the management is gone, that Ruud isn't kind of there. There's no crossover really as well, and he has a bit of time to gel the new ideas.
Yeah, that was to be expected, Shane, and especially with managers at this elite level, they always bring in their own staff. He obviously has no relationship with Ruud van Nistelrooy, and he can't be keeping fellas on just because they were great players in the former day. He's done well in the interim phase. The one thing that surprised me about van Nistelrooy was the fact that he came in initially as an assistant, because he did really well at PSV, and he'd be seen then as a manager. So why you would want to go fall back to an assistant? I know you're going back to your former club, and maybe that was the pull. But when you look at the job that he did, even in those 3 or 4 games, he kind of is a manager. He doesn't look like an assistant manager. He kind of feels like he's a manager. So I think it will do him no harm in terms of going forward, and I think you will see him in the hot seat somewhere else fairly soon. But in terms of the new manager coming in, Amorim, I think it was to be expected, and I'm excited about this lad coming in, I have to say.
Right, Al, I think we've pushed your voice nearly far enough, so we're going to hit one more game tonight. We'll go back to the Premier League tomorrow. But what about City? The wheels are off the bike.
They are off the bike, Ruby, yeah. They need staplers at the moment. They're really struggling. So if you look at it, I think it's just, I'm looking at the team even that played yesterday, and you have the young lads centre back, and I just, and maybe the recruitment, I think the recruitment has been an issue because they haven't really signed anyone in the last kind of period, if you like, of the windows, and I think that's probably aimed at the fact that obviously the charge is hanging over them, I'd say, and maybe that's an issue in terms of signing players, and they've gone with the squad that they have, but it's just been so stretched at the moment because they have a few injuries. Now, it's not all just down to Rodri being missing, there's a couple of other injuries as well, but the wheels have come off. I think it's good for everybody else. Guardiola has to be concerned. Now, I know when the interviewer asked him yesterday about the form, he was quick to say it's two Premier League games we've lost, so I know it's all competitions, it's four in a row, but it's three different competitions, but certainly the league form, and we mentioned even Arsenal having to claw back a 9-point gap on Liverpool. It's 5 now already for Man City, and they certainly won't want that to grow any bigger. I think 5 at the moment is doable to catch Liverpool, but you certainly won't want to get it anymore, and they just need to get back to winning ways. But I definitely think for the first time in a long, long time, if ever, Ruby, that he has to be concerned, Guardiola.
Well, I'm sure he is. We're going to go back to Premier League again tomorrow night. Alan Colley, thanks for making the effort to come in after you were in bed so early. We're going to get a quick break and we'll be back with the rugby.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, Keane Tracy, rugby writer with the Irish Independent, and Stephen Ferris, a former Ireland international, are joining us for our rugby conversation. Before we chat to the lads, though, Alad Walters, the head of athletic performance with the Irish men's national rugby team, was up in front of the media today, and he was speaking to Michael Corcoran.
Alad, I suppose now that everybody's had a chance to kind of reflect and think back and look back at last Friday, is there anything that kind of stands out apart from the result of the game? It just seemed to be a complete un-Ireland-like performance, if you understand.
Yeah, not to opt out of the question here, Michael, but that was my first performance up close with an Ireland group anyway, so it's very hard for me to comment on if it's an Ireland or not. It seemed an Ireland from even, you know, what we've seen previously, you know, when I was with England or whatever. So, yeah, there's been a good few conversations this week anyway to put things right, and that's the big task, to do it very, very quickly ahead of Friday night's challenge.
I suppose that's one of the advantages of the November window, isn't it? You play three or four matches one week after the other, so if things don't go well, you don't have an awful lot of time to kind of work on things, but you get another opportunity pretty quickly.
Yeah, you know, the players have all come back in this week and ready to get things right, you know, and been pretty open and honest in terms of what we need to do as a group.
Is there a big difference, or how do you bridge the gap between being physically fit and match fit, if you understand?
Yeah, I think that's always going to be the challenge. You look at, you know, there's aspects as well. You know, New Zealand recently played Japan and England going into this game, and I'd say, if anything, the England game probably gave them a bit of a fright. You know, probably physically dominant maybe in that game as well, so they were primed, but that's no excuse for us anyway. We just have to get up to speed very, very quickly, but yeah, that's always going to be a challenge, I think, match fitness and physical fitness. But you know, that's the nature of the challenge, isn't it?
It's almost unfortunate, isn't it, that you're kind of trying to get your match fitness up to the level it needs to be at, but it's at international level, if you understand.
Yeah, it's a shock to some, isn't it? And I think we saw that maybe at times in the game. But yeah, I think the more we can, you know, keep that preparation specific to the first challenge and try and recreate those episodes in training, then the better the players will be prepared anyway. So
now, I know you for a while, and you know the Irish environment for quite a while also, but you also know that the players within this environment are massively critical and self-critical, and that's what's going to be important over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, like I've been so impressed, you know, coming in. Obviously know a couple of the players based my time in Munster, and there's Stu McCloskey was on an emerging Ireland tour to Bucharest a few years ago anyway, but these guys have been very, very open and honest, and not shying away from the areas that we need to address, so that's been brilliant to see this week.
So a big week ahead, but it can only be one game at a time, effectively. I mean, we're being bombarded by rugby over the course of the weekend that could scare the living daylights out of us, but some of the other teams' performances, but it's Argentina at the end of this week.
Yeah, and what a special challenge that's going to be as well. You know, you're looking at what they've done since Felipe's come in. Well, obviously
obviously Checker started them off, didn't he? And then Felipe's come in, and the boys know him pretty well, don't they? You know, from their time at Leinster. But the challenge now, I think, is pretty substantial considering how well they did in the Rugby Championship. I think it was the best Rugby Championship they've had. They've beaten all the big teams now, and I'm sure they'll be desperate to come and take a scalp again now on Friday night.
And just a question, you know, to people who kind of wonder about whether there should be more younger players. I mean, age isn't really a barrier, is it, to playing at the top level?
No, not at all. I think if the best performing player is of a certain age, well, then he is the best choice. And selection, I don't think it should ever be based on age or age profile or the overall age of a group. You know, the best players should be playing, and that's it, I think.
Keane Allard-Waters was a great listen, but was he a strange choice for media duties after a defeat?
Yeah, I felt sorry for him in a way. He kind of touched on it there at the start of the chat with Corky that it was his first game with Ireland. Like, the RFU did a great job by getting him from the English Union. This guy won a World Cup with South Africa as well. Like, he touched on, he worked with Munster, but he's only in the door a wet week. I thought it was pretty surprising not to see one of the senior coaches kind of front up and give a bit more meat on the bones, I suppose, Ruby, for the reasons for Friday night's defeat. There's only so much. Look, his title is Head of Athletic Performance. I think there's only so much an S&C coach can tell you about the tactical reasons it went wrong. So I was a little surprised, to be honest, yeah.
Stephen Ferris, when you left the Aviva, what were you thinking?
Honestly, I think everybody was just in a little bit of shock. Like, before the match, Ruby, there just seemed to be, you know, a real good feel-good factor around the Friday night lights. And yeah, the atmosphere was building lovely. The time was flat out. Everybody was, you know, chomping at the bit to get to this game. And then, like, 5 minutes, you know, it didn't take 40 or 50 minutes to go, oh, geez, this game isn't living up to what we all expected it to be. It literally took 2 or 3 minutes on the clock, and you were like, okay, this doesn't seem like, you know, and I said it on Twitter, like, the game was just all a bit boring, like, wasn't it? You know, there wasn't that many incidents in it that got you up off your seat, really. And yeah, the hype during the week and or during the last, well, probably since the Rugby World Cup, was much more entertaining than probably the rugby match itself. And I have no idea why that actually was, you know, how that happened, because we've just been so used to seeing Ireland turn up, and even when they have an off day, they play a lot better than they did against New Zealand. They don't make as many mistakes, and you know, everybody has their own opinions of why that might have happened. But yeah, the players have come out and said preparation was good, and you know, they enjoyed themselves in the week in Portugal, and they're ready to go, and it just didn't happen for them. And you know, as a former player, I have been there, Ruby. You know, you might have been sitting on a horse as well that's been favoured to win, and for some reason it just didn't kick for you. And it's the same, exactly the same as a rugby lad. You just, almost the harder you try, the worse it sort of gets, and the more mistakes creep into your game. So, yeah, walking out of the Aviva was huge disappointment, along with just going, geez, how the hell did that happen?
I often found that the pressure of expectation often exceeded reality. Was there a case of that as well? Ireland were expected to win, but reality was, why?
Yeah, I think the expectancy is because of the home record that they had. You know, the meetings that they've had against New Zealand have been very good. And, you know, obviously I think it was 5 wins out of the last 9. New Zealand hadn't won there for quite some time. And yeah, like, you know, when the ball is rolling the way it has been at the Aviva Stadium for the last number of years, you know, you fancy your chances against absolutely anybody. And I think that was the feeling around the ground, Ruby. You know, even walking through some of the boxes before the game and chatting to a few punters and having the crack, you know, nobody breathed about New Zealand going to beat Ireland in their own backyard. Like, you know, it's just all about, you know, what Ireland were going to do, and, you know, Keelan Doris as captain, and, you know, the bench that were going to come on, and you know, it was just all around Ireland. And New Zealand obviously had an answer for a lot of us, and they played half decent. I don't think they hit their full straps either. And yeah, Ireland have got to dig deep now this week, right a few wrongs against Argentina, and hopefully get a performance, because that's what was missing at the weekend. There was no, you know, you can't just turn around and say, oh yeah, the boys weren't up for it. You know, there was a lack of commitment, there was a lack of energy. I think it you know, that just dissipated with the way the game went in the end. But it was just too many mistakes. And as a sort of reference there, the harder you try, the worse it sort of gets. But yeah, hugely disappointing.
51552 is a text number. Actually, no name to this text, but it's very well summed up. Too many spectators, not enough supporters on Friday night. Keane, Stephen mentioned the errors, really, and you have a really good article, I must say, in the Irish Independent, the breakdown. How a mistake every 2 minutes cost Ireland in dire scoreless spell. A mistake every 2 minutes.
Yeah, I was proud of coming up with that stat myself. It wasn't Nick from Opta or anything like that. Yeah, like, it was one of those games, and Stephen has touched on it there, that I thought it was actually worse watching it back than I thought watching it live at the time. And yeah, so after basically Ireland scored the try through Josh van der Fleer and Jack Crowley kicks the conversion, they went 36 minutes without scoring, which is unheard of for an Irish team, particularly at home. Like Stephen has said, they'd won their last 19 games at home. And yeah, what I found was in those 36 minutes, I counted 18 poor errors. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the maths there. They were averaging a really bad error every 2 minutes, which is just not like an Ireland team at all. Like, they had 30 missed tackles, 21 handling errors, 11 turnovers conceded. The stats, like, you know, sometimes the stats don't paint a true picture of the story, but in this case, they absolutely did. And I don't think anyone has been able to put their finger on why it happened. My sense would be that, look, they have enough credit in the bank. Look what they did on their previous game, albeit a few months ago in July, beating the world champions in their own backyard. They did win the Six Nations, but there have been a few signs throughout the course of the year that, you know, they've been a little bit up and down, inconsistent, and that's what we saw again. I think Andy Farrell will have to look at what he does for the team selection on Friday night. I don't expect him to make wholesale changes, which is fine, but he's got to look at the makeup of that bench, because they got absolutely zero impact from it at the weekend, which is a big, big issue. Rugby nowadays, more than ever, I would argue, is a 23-man game. You look at what the Springboks do with their bench, but you had guys that were picked there. Look, they're in their autumn of their careers, and Corky was asking Alan Walters about that, and I do agree that age shouldn't be a barrier either, but at the same time, that bench was picked to see out a victory. So in other words, the coaches had come up with a plan that they thought would be good enough to put them in front sufficiently enough that the experience of, like, you know, your Conor Murray, your Peter O'Mahony, your Ian Henderson, these guys coming on will be able to see out the victory. Now, ironically, they were actually 13-12 ahead, and Farrell made a big decision by taking Jack Crowley off, which, you know, that's a big topic of conversation, I think, here as well. But Kieran Frawley came on, and look, he had a nightmare cameo. I think he'd be the first to admit that himself. Ian Henderson made several uncharacteristic errors. And I think they're just spread a sense of panic throughout the team. So I think he's going to have to look at that. Like, guys like Craig Casey, you know, guys like Ryan Baird, I think were really unlucky to miss out. So it'll be interesting to see what he does this week.
Stephen, when you go with that point and you look at the bench, and we did have heroes on the bench who have given huge amount to Irish rugby. But when do you put youth on the bench? When do you think, what's the next team?
Yeah, I totally agree with Keane there. It was a bench that was fit to see out a game if they were leading by 10 points with 20 minutes to go. And unfortunately, with 20 minutes to go, 15, 20 minutes to go, it was time to have a bit of impact, and they didn't have that. Like, and the thing is, you can have experience on the bench, and you can have guys on the bench that can see a game out, but these guys on the bench have played no rugby or very little rugby all season. So, like, Rob Herring hasn't played a minute. Tom O'Toole, who I know didn't last too long, hasn't started that many games for Ulster. Ian Henderson, been in and out of the Ulster squad, picked up a few niggles. Peter O'Mahony's got 40 minutes the week before, and then all of a sudden he's coming off the bench in a huge test match against arguably one of the best teams in the world. You know, Conor Murray as well. Like, it's so, for me, it's just where is the impact there? Where are the players that are going to come on and get you a half bust or make a game changing tackle, a big moment in the match to happen? All the moments that happened when you know those guys were on were unfortunately mistakes that caught up with them. And I totally agree. I thought Frawley coming on at that level, he showed in South Africa he's capable of doing it, but like, everybody's got to remember, this guy is young in the out-half position. Like, he's been playing all over the Leinster back line the last couple of seasons. And Jack Crowley has been really consistent for Munster. He hasn't been setting the world on fire. Of course he hasn't. We've been talking about that. But he's been a lot more consistent. And he's been playing in that position for the last, what, 7, 8 years of his career. I know he's been in and out a little bit at centre for Munster. But he knows that role. Frawley thrown in there. And yeah, obviously it didn't go to plan. So that was another huge, huge call. And yeah, Andy Farrell isn't scared to make calls, as we've seen in the past, and usually it works out in his favour and the team's favour. But yeah, the bench is a huge, huge issue. You've got to bring on a bench like a Cormac Isichukwu, a Cian Prendergast, guys that are going to come on and light a few boys up and really get the crowd on their feet with carries or big moments in the game. And unfortunately, we just didn't have that coming off the bench.
Keen, Stephen has given us a couple of names. Who else would you think could be fired into that bench that's going to create a bit of magic? Or maybe he's young enough that needs to be blooded, that needs to be the next generation of an Irish team? Because let's face, call a spade a spade. We're going to need 30 players to compete at the World Cup. We didn't have 30 at the last World Cup. Where are we going to find the 30?
Well, like, Ruby, if you're not going to blood players in November internationals, then when are you going to? Because the Six Nations will be soon upon us. And as we've seen, like, that's not the time to be throwing in young guys, because they're obviously, like, it's a competitive game. So, look, my hope would be that they took the All Blacks game in isolation. I think the bench selection really suggested that. I would expect for the game against Argentina on Friday, Fiji and Australia, for more younger guys. Because even if you look back to the summer tour, Ruby, Craig Casey, like, had a fantastic tour before he got injured. Look at Jamie Osborne at full back. Now, look, obviously Hugo Keenan is back in the mix, and you can kind of understand that to an extent. But, like, a guy like Craig Casey, I think it sent out a really mixed messaging to him, really, that he was good enough to be picked to start in South Africa, and now all of a sudden he's not deemed good enough to potentially see out a victory against the All Blacks. So I think Andy Farrell, yeah, is going to have a look at guys like Craig Casey. I think Ryan Baird, even though he's had a bit of a stop-start season in terms of injuries, but he was very good on the South Africa tour. Stephen has mentioned guys like Cormac Isichukwu, Cian Prendergast. Look, I don't think there's going to be wholesale changes this weekend. I think Farrell has shown that he is quite loyal, but I think you just have to have an injection of youth there as well. I think the Fiji game, I think we'll probably see guys like Sam Prendergast, certainly Cormac Isichukwu as well. But I don't think there's any harm in having a couple of those younger guys on the bench for against Argentina, because, like I said, if you're not going to play them now, then when are you? And you're right, Ruby. Look, the 2027 World Cup is still such a long time away, but you look at what a lot of the other nations are doing. Look at what South Africa are doing. Look at what New Zealand are doing. They're all regenerating their squads in front of us at the moment. So it doesn't have to be to the detriment of, you know, throwing away potential victories or whatever like that. The Irish system has shown time and time again, look at the success at under-20s level, that Irish rugby is in very good health. And there's just times where I think the youth maybe has to be trusted a little bit more.
Yeah, but when you look then, Stephen, at, say, Australia, Fiji, South Africa, New Zealand, why is the Southern Hemisphere ahead of the Northern Hemisphere right now?
It wasn't a good weekend, was it, for the Northern Hemisphere teams? No, it really wasn't. I've absolutely no idea as to why, you know, a couple of the teams didn't get the results. I was surprised that Ireland, you know, didn't show up and didn't get the right result. I think the majority of pundits or former players or journalists would have said that Ireland were going to, you know, win that game. That didn't happen. For all money, I thought the Wales would have beaten Fiji. That didn't happen. Scotland, obviously, well, they get beaten every time that they play against the Southern Hemisphere team, so there's no surprise in that. But yeah, it's just one of those weekends that, you know, draws so many questions out of it. And just when you think some of the Northern Hemisphere teams are flying and they've turned a bit of a corner, then all of a sudden they're quietly shut down again by the Southern Hemisphere teams. And I think the rugby over the weekend was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. I know that the England-Australia game had everybody off their seats, didn't it? And especially that last 10 minutes, just so many moments, just pure, absolutely pure theatre in that game. So long may it continue for the rest of the Autumn Nation series. And, you know, hopefully Ireland can pick up a big win against Argentina, but that's not going to be easy. Obviously off a huge result against Italy last weekend, racking up 50 points. So Yeah, it's going to be. I'm really interested to see what the team sheet's going to be this weekend, because I think, Ruby, a point that I make here is before, like the last Rugby World Cup, even 2019, you could have said what Irish 23 players were going to be selected for the first game of the Rugby World Cup in 2019 and 2023, and it feels pretty similar again if you went through the team for the next Rugby World Cup. It was probably only big Joe McCarthy that shot himself in there for the last one, but I really, really hope there's two or three guys over the next year that really stick their hand up and put pressure on some of the big names, some of the big hitters, and you know, change the tide for these young guys coming through, because there will be limited opportunities, very limited opportunities, and they got to try and take them. So let's see how the next couple of games work out, but hopefully there's a bit of change in the selection and a couple of young guys get opportunities.
Okay, great. So we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Stephen Ferris, Keane Tracy, thank you both very much. We'll hear from Mac Hansen tomorrow, actually, incidentally, as we continue our build-up to Ireland-Argentina. Before we do end this evening's show, a big thank you to everyone who entered our PwC Camogie All-Stars competition this evening. And a big congratulations to Eilish Marr, who was just won €400. All thanks to PwC. Waterford's Beth Carton was, of course, the 2023 Senior Player of the Year. And if you missed out today, don't worry, because we'll be back doing it all again tomorrow. And Ruby will be joined by Marie tomorrow, I believe. So I shall.
Happy days. Happy days. Take the day off.
I'll take the day off.
You wore out with Carly last night, obviously.
No. It was the week before. I haven't spoken to you since Shells won the league, but listen, that's a conversation.
You sounded good last Monday.
We can have that conversation at 7 o'clock when you and I will be chatting, when our listeners, though, will be tuned into Beto da Silva on the new music show. We're taking a quick ad break and going to check in with the news desk as well. From all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler and Laura Lee Davis for working on this evening's show.